Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Tell you, even though we're talking about cyber, I think one of the biggest threats right now is the issue of deep fakes and artificial intelligence. And here's why. Because a lot of those things are being used to perpetrate these scams. For example, the old Nigerian prince email. How many people have got those, right? You could tell them when they came in because they were worded kind of badly or, you know.
Yeah.
But why did they keep coming out? Because they were working. People were still falling for it. And
hey, all you players out there, welcome back to the Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. I say this every week, but I am so excited about today's guest. And if you're looking at him on the screen right now on YouTube, you probably recognize him. He was one of the original co-creators of the Game of Crimes podcast with Murph and Morgan. And it's an honor to welcome back to the show, Mr. Morgan Wright. What's up, brother?
Oh, boy, you're going to regret this. That's all I can say.
Yeah, now I have the final editing.
Now you have the control. You can hero or zero. I got to make you sound good today.
That's it, man. I mean, your screen might all of a sudden switch over to be a jackass on there. You just never know what might pop up.
Yeah, just make my hair look good. That's all I ask.
Yeah, I got to figure out an app to get rid of that hair and like put a bald skull caps on you or something to kind of match what you got going on this side of the screen. Man, I'll tell you what, I've missed you on here, buddy. I feel like I'm just dragging through, but I'm excited to have you back on here.
No. Hey, man, I'm hearing all sorts of good stuff about you. I'd still read the reviews and listen to some episodes. So, we worked on an episode together. I helped you do some editing because we had to disguise the voice.
Absolutely. And that will be coming up. I think I got that. If everything works out, that episode will have been last week's episode.
Okay.
So I was telling Morgan yesterday, we did a little catch up yesterday and I'm trying to get enough episodes out so that I can maybe take a week or two off at Christmas time and enjoy the kids and be ready to kick them out when their time's up. You know what I mean?
My middle son was a 3-time boomerang. You know, you get to a certain point, you throw him out, he comes back, you throw him out, he comes back. Third time, it's like, you got 30 days, figure this out. Boom, go.
Oh man, this is going to be good today. And not only is Morgan one of the original creators, he and I created the Game of Crimes here, but the way we got together is through his former law enforcement career. And I think I got the order right here. Man, I've been picking my brain for a couple of days. Salina first, Salina PD.
Salina PD.
Then Kansas State Highway Patrol.
Yep.
And then Garden City.
Then Garden City. And then after that, I moved to the great Commonwealth of Virginia.
That's not a bad place to live. It's just that northern part there is just a little bit too close to something to the east there. The den of iniquity, the swamp, I guess you call it there, huh?
Yeah, I every time I fly in and somebody says, welcome to Washington Dulles, I say, we are in the Commonwealth of Virginia. We have nothing to do with Washington, D.C. Quit saying this.
For some reason, I can see you doing that.
By the way, a lot of people don't realize, too, the Pentagon is in Arlington County. It is in Virginia. It is not in D.C.
And it's right across the highway there from DEA headquarters.
Yes, it is.
And I also want to point out here that Morgan is a former military vet. So, I mean, he's hitting all the cylinders today. We have brought on a hero. I'm going to be nice to him. I was going to say I was going to bust his chops, but he's
Why
pretty good at busting
now?
Back. Well, we'll see how it goes. But one thing that hasn't changed, Morgan, is our small-town police blotter. I found an article. Did you see the article I sent you?
Oh, not only did I see it, I have a lot of history with that area.
No kidding.
Yep.
I didn't see where the article was from in Kansas.
It's in Salina, Kansas.
Until I read it. That's right. I thought, this is perfect. I don't care what the story is. This will be perfect for Morgan. So as we still do our disclaimer on here, and our disclaimer is this is a show about crime. We talk about bad people. We still talk about bad people doing bad things to good people. We take our stories very seriously and our guests, but we're going to have a lot of fun at the expense of these dumbass criminals that are out there.
Amen, brother.
So I'll let you run with the one from Kansas, Brad.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I had found this guy, I don't know if I would have arrested him. I think the shame of what he did would have been enough to be a deterrent. So here's what happened. It's a 21-year-old man. So look, I started my career 1982 in Salina, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And so Salina at that time was divided into five districts. She had like a north district, which kind of was the top one-fourth of the town. Then district 2, 3, 4, and 5 looked like kind of like a square.
Right.
And then below that, well then, but on midnight sometimes, if we didn't have enough officers or if things were slow, they would make District 2 and 3 dropped down a little bit more like rectangles. And then District 4 was everything south of District 2 and 3. So there was no District 5. So some, it'd be bunny land. I'd be out there by, and just if we're this area. So I know this area because I work burglaries out there. So here's what happened, Murph. This is the botch. I mean, this is how you, when you know you're really stupid, right? So this guy named Juan Aguirre, he's accused of breaking into a sex shop called Cirilla's, which that wasn't there when I was there, but I know the area where it's at. There's a lot of industry. There's a mall down there, things like that. He shattered the front glass door, caused $500 in damage. You get down there. And so the cops, they start doing a canvas of the area. And this is, you know, during the night, they find this idiot, number one. Right? Anybody riding a bicycle in the middle of the night is going to be a suspect, right?
Absolutely.
So they pull him over and they spot him riding a bicycle. So they search. And they get consent to search. So they found a sledgehammer head that was attached to a rope. Well, there's your burglary tool, right?
Unbelievable.
So what he did was, this is a sex shop. So in the front window, there were 6 movies, DVDs, that he busted out to get. Well, he got the DVD cases. He just didn't get the DVDs. They were display only. The DVD cases were only valued at $5 a piece. So he got screwed in the end. There were a lot of things you could screw with in that shop. I mean, it's a sex shop when you go to the website and look at it. But so he gets arrested for burglary, criminal damage to property, and theft. And he's being held in the Saline County Jail, of where I'd put many a person, in lieu of a $6,000 bond. I mean, if you're going to go to jail, at least get the real DVDs. That's like that's like going in to steal a car and you walk away with the tire. I got the car. No, you got a tire. You know,
of all things to break into, too, are you going to go to prison for some sex tapes? Really?
Yeah, can you imagine hanging out with the bad guys? What you in here for? Murder, rape. Right. What are you in here for? I stole some blank DVD cases.
Empty?
Empty. It's like I used to tell people, robbing a bank. You're going to rob a bank. Go for $1 million. Don't go for 5,000 or 500. You're going to prison for the same amount of time. So
that's right. They say everybody has their price. Nobody's been even close to my price for me to commit a crime yet. I might be easy, but I ain't cheap.
I've seen you in a thong, Murph. Don't worry. You do have a price.
Well, you said you'd never bring that up again. I mean, come on. Now I got to call your wife and have some punishment dealt out.
Yeah. Well, being married's punishment enough. Oh, then I'm bummed. Thank you very much. Oh.
I'm going to guess Trish doesn't listen to the show anymore.
She's busy doing wifely things right now, yes.
And the door's closed.
I hope so. Well, I don't know. My cats may stroll. If you guys are watching, my cats may stroll across here.
We miss seeing Spudnut here on a regular basis. I haven't had anybody had an animal. I've had them bark in the background when they're doing interviews, but none of them have come walking across the screen.
Well, right now, Chunkosaurus Rex, Fanny, what you call Spudnut, is over here to my right. Rosebud, the delicate, dainty one, is over here to my left. But eventually, sometime, I'm having to now put my, if you guys are watching on video, this is the kitty. This is one of my kitty mats.
That's where they let you lay. That's where you sit.
Yeah, I've been pushed out of my chair, been pushed out of my bed. So, but one of them will sleep there, the other one will sleep here. They got to be within arm's reach of me a lot of the time.
Yeah, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. We
nothing
like our
wrong
pets.
With that.
Like our pets more than our kids, don't we?
They're easier to deal with. Yeah.
All right, guy, committing that burglary of all things to break into. I mean, you kind of sympathize with people if they're having a hard time finding a job and they don't have any food for their family. Not that you're condoning it, but you can kind of understand why they might stoop to search things. But this guy picked a sex shop. Lordy, lordy. What was the old movie store we used to go to before streaming
Blockbuster.
Television? Blockbuster. I guess the guy was too young to remember what a Blockbuster was because there was never a DVD. You know, the CDs were not in the cases. Well, low-hanging fruit.
That's right, baby. That's why jails were created. You may not always catch the smart ones, but you tend to catch a lot of the dumb ones.
There you go. All right. So now everybody knows I'm in Florida, and sometimes I get tired of reading Florida crime stories because there's just such an abundance.
Yeah. On Netflix, there is a new series called The Florida Man.
Is that right?
And it's a, yes, there is. And it's episode 2 just dropped. It's about stupid stories from Florida.
I'd check that out. Well, here's one. I don't know if it'll make it there, but this one, it's the title of it is Florida Man's Family Values Appear Shaky. And that could apply to most of these freaking people. All right. A Florida man who has the phrase, you're going to love this. He has this tattooed, family over everything. He's got that tattooed on his chest. He's just really sending out a message there.
Is it spelled correctly?
Yeah, believe it or not. Believe it or not. Because that's, you know, it's like that TV show or that TV commercial you see, No Regrets.
No regrets. I have no regrets.
That's it. Well, this jackass, he threw his, this is how much he thinks of family. He threw his pregnant girlfriend to the ground because he believed that she was talking to another man, according to the cops. So this jerk's name is Roldan Aliman, 22 years old. He was arrested about 2:50 a.m. after a confrontation in a Pinellas Park apartment. You know where Pinellas Park is, Morgan?
If I'm thinking, it's in Pinellas County.
Well, it's over there in the place where we always got most of our stories when you were still on the show, Tampa, yeah. St. Pete.
Yeah,
Clearwater.
Yeah, Tampa, St. Pete. That's what I'm saying. Hillsborough, Pinellas County, that area right there. Yeah.
Pinellas is right there in the middle of it. I don't know what it is about that area. It's such a beautiful area over there.
Well, because Pinellas rhymes with penis, and a lot of these guys are dickheads.
There you go. You heard it first here. All right. According to the criminal complaint, Aliman picked up the victim and dropped her to the ground. He thought the woman who was 4 months pregnant with his child, I guess he thinks it's his child, had been conversing with another man. The unemployed Aliman later struggled with cops seeking to arrest him for battering the pregnant woman. So now he's getting his clock cleaned a little bit. He's punching and kicking at the officers. But in return, the officer deployed the taser. So he got to ride the lightning rod. That we need a video of. Just watching him doing the funky chicken while there.
That's why he said family, you know, things were a little bit shaky, right? This is it?
Literally. But here's the worst part. He repeatedly punched the canine unit in the face and the chest. Now, that right there might get you shot. You never know.
You know what? Out in this area, Murphy, you remember, too, that there are people who delay having kids because they've got their dogs and their pets. You might hit a pedestrian out here, and obviously you don't want to do that. But, man, it's like John Wick. You kill a dog, and it's like, oh, this, you are dead to me.
That's true. That's a good comparison, too.
Well, and there's also that video, too. Law enforcement, they're chasing this guy. He was armed. I think it was a robbery. And as they start to turn the canine loose on him, he reaches in and he pulls out a pistol, and he's about ready to shoot the canine. Well, the canine officer, one of the other guys behind him, had an M4, it looked like, or something like that. Didn't end well for the other guy, because remember, a lot of those dogs too, they are law enforcement officers, so mm-hmm. you can use lethal force to defend a law enforcement officer like that canine. So but I just love watching when I love there's a couple of videos too. One guy in the gym, he's been a pain in the butt, so the cop comes in and all you see is the video, and he turns and he got this goofy fighting stance, and the cop just like that Indiana Jones just reaches in, grabs his taser. And then the guy just drops to the floor like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah, you're a tough guy now, aren't you? While you pee your pants.
That's right.
Well, this guy, he had additional felony charges in addition to felony battery and resisting arrest. He was charged with marijuana possession after a small amount of pot was found in his backpack. Aliman is locked up on $20,300 bond, not just $20,000 or $21,000. It's $20,300. He's previously been convicted of obstruction, weed possession, battery on the same victim, his current girlfriend. When will she learn? Never. He's been arrested on several other occasions for strong-arm robbery, aggravated assault, and battery on a senior citizen. That'd be you, Morgan. But, now you got to love this. Those matters were not pursued by prosecutors. So I'm going to guess the witnesses or the victims refused to testify. It just pisses you off, doesn't it?
So, well, if he had battered me, it would have been the suspect. He rest in peace.
There you go. And the only thing it doesn't say, I'm pretty sure it's probably in there somewhere, but they didn't put it in there. What's our number one rule here on the show, Morgan?
Don't do meth.
There you go. I'm sure meth's involved somewhere.
Hey, speaking of that real quick, I requalified for my Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act, the concealed carry. So I found Elise. My wife gets her hair cut. Well, her her beautician's husband is the range master now for Leesburg PD.
Nice.
So I dropped him a couple bucks, said, hey, let's go over to the range. And just want everybody to, I was one short. I was 49 out of 50. So
wow. Not bad for a person your age.
Yeah, not bad from the 2 yard line either, man. You get within 2 yards of me, you won. You're gonna be a holy man.
That's it. How far back do you have to shoot now?
So I could not shoot. I wasn't to keep my Kansas qualification. I had to shoot the Kansas course. So I actually had to fire, I think, 12 of those rounds, or no, six or eight of those rounds were at 25 yards. So I had to. Mm-hmm. I started at 25, 15, 7, 5, 2, and then, you know, things like that. So in Virginia, you only have to go to 15 yards. But see, Kansas, we're farm boys, man. We can pick you off from 300 feet.
Well, you got to shoot those hawks out of the sky and get those groundhogs out of the fields.
I will tell you, when I was going through the State Patrol Academy, one of our instructors stood back from, I think it was the 50-yard line, may have been a little bit farther, but he had a Smith & Wesson 686, which we were carrying at the time.
Got one.
He put six rounds basically in the right, really close in the 10 ring there, in those old B-27 yep. targets. Yeah, I'm like, damn. It almost looked like an artillery round, though. I mean, it was like elevated.
I'm not sure how long ago they changed it, but when I went through the DEA Academy, we were still having to qualify from the 50, 25, 15, 10, and 7, maybe, something, or 15 and 7, not the 10, maybe.
Well, you know what they did now with the new targets? Because it's really not about hitting the 10 ring or the 9 ring. It's about hitting the target. So now it's just the silhouette. So as long as you hit inside the silhouette. Look, I carry most of my everyday carries a 40 caliber. I'm thinking about going to a 9, but you get hit with the 40 caliber or a 9 anywhere. It's like the goal is not to kill somebody. Your goal is to stop them.
Stop the threat.
And if you hit if you get hit in the side or in the armor, as long as you get hit with inside that silhouette, chances are you're probably going to stop or slow down, you know, the assault. So yeah, I'm glad they went to that.
It's going to leave a mark. That's for sure.
Going to hurt.
Oh, man, this is good. This is all good being back here. Now, the reason, there's a couple reasons why I asked Morgan to come back. One is because he helped start this show. He's the reason that it was successful to start with, because you guys know you're still dealing with me trying to learn how to edit. Morgan is still gracious enough to work with me when I run into issues. But if you look at it from another point of view, wherever I screw up, blame it on Morgan. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's it, man.
So when we'd always planned to bring you back on the show, get an update, see what you've been up to. But then not so long ago, several of our longtime listeners have written in and they're like, hey, what's Morgan doing now? We never did a show with him. We never got an interview from Morgan about his life. And they even said that about me. But if you thought that about me, go back to episode one when we first started this whole show, which actually I wrote down was it June 28th of 2021 was our first episode.
Wow. 3.5 years ago.
Hard to believe, isn't it? This is, if everything works out right, you will be episode 172 is what I'm shooting for.
172.
Unbelievable. But the fact that it's, I guess that's a testament to you, Morgan, that the listeners are missing you here on the show. We've had a ton of good laughs on here over the first 3 years of this thing. We had some battles with other people as we were trying to get this thing started. But here's to them. We're still on the air. Look at us.
Yeah.
There was a lot of accusations made against us that were all BS and lies that some certain, and we've never talked about that here on the show. I'm not going to talk about it today, but it's just, I have seen comments along the way that, you know, it's a shame what Murph and Morgan did to those other guys. That's not what happened at all. They're not worth our time wasting our breath to try and describe it.
Are you talking about the first group of guys we talked about? Oh, yeah.
They tried to set us up I think initially they were trying to help. But when we had questions that they couldn't answer is when they started making accusations.
Yeah, it's kind of like, where's the written contract and exactly how's the money go? There are a lot of questions. But if folks thought we were doing this for the money, I'm telling you, it ain't that. And Murph, I checked because I'm doing some research for another project I'm working on, which we'll talk about too. But even then, even in Listen Notes, Game of Crime is still 0.5% in the top 0.5% of all podcasts. Well, what does that tell you? It tells you it's like in this industry or the movie industry, entertainment, the money is really concentrated at the top. Unless you're like in the 0.1 or 0.2%, man, after that, it falls off precipitously. That's a big word. That means a whole bunch.
Oh, thank you. It just has something on my nose there.
Yep.
But and I want our listeners to know, we're not talking about James and Jimmy.
No.
For Small Town
Guys,
Murders. Roy's, they've been fantastic.
Hey, by the way, I still got the bottle of booze they sent me. I'm not much of a, you know, a bourbon drinker or you know, stuff like that, but I did tap into that bottle here a while back, so I've been having little shots, you know, every now and then. So, no, they've always been gracious to us.
Absolutely. Just
and
love
Sarah,
those guys.
Sarah runs everything with an iron fist.
She does, and I think that's the reason they're successful. We'll give credit to Sarah.
That's right.
So moving on here, but that's the reason we're coming back on here with Morgan now, and thank you for giving us your time. It's only going to be about a 6-hour interview, so just hang in there with us.
I've done interview and interrogations longer than that. I'm your Huckleberry. I told you the way I used to get confessions, not because I was good, because they finally go, shut the hell up. I'll tell you whatever you want. Just stop talking.
Yep. So we're going to get into Morgan's background here. And let's just start off. Tell everybody where you were born, Morgan, because that's just a little bit different.
Well, I was born in a hospital like most people. But
where was that hospital?
No, it was Fort Riley, Kansas, but my dad was military. My dad was actually World War II and a Vietnam vet. He got out after World War II, came back in after Korea, had a tour and a half of Vietnam. But then, so we were born in Fort Riley, moved to North Fort Bragg, and then moved to Monterey, where he went through Defense Language Institute, DLI. And then we were in Iran for 3 years.
I thought you were born over there.
No, but my first foreign language I spoke, obviously, was Farsi, which created some interesting connections, as we'll talk about later. But yeah, no, so we did that and grew up for a while in South Bend, Indiana, a little burb out there called Mishawaka. So I used to go over and watch the Notre Dame football team practice. Never got to go to a game until I was an adult. But that was back in the days of Arip Parsegan and Joe Theismann before they changed his name to Theismann. He came in second that year, but the campaign was Theismann for Heisman. Then we moved back to Kansas. So by the time I was in fifth, I was halfway through fifth grade when we moved back to Kansas. By that time, I was born in Kansas. We moved to North Carolina. We moved to Monterey, California, went to Iran, came back to Dodge City, Kansas. He was a National Guard advisor for a while, which meant he was out doing death notices in Vietnam. Yeah. Moved to Mishawaka, Indiana, and then moved back to Kansas. So by the time I was in fifth grade, we'd lived basically in, you know, 7 or 8 places.
Holy cow. No wonder you're screwed up the way you are.
I know,
man. That explains a lot.
Yeah, that's why when we move, I've just got a box, one box. You
know? That's the way it feels. And then eventually, like now, you know, and I think we're done moving. We moved so many times with the government, but finally, before we moved to Florida 3 years ago, we went through and all those boxes of college beer mugs and all that stuff finally made it to the trash dump.
At some point, I cleaned out our garage. You'd be surprised. You get those bagsters from waste management, those huge things. I filled an entire bagster just out of our garage.
You're not getting ready because of your age, or I mean, you're planning for when you pass over, or you know, you don't want to have everybody else to find your stuff, or what is it?
Well, that stuff's hidden. You'll never find it. But no. We're getting ready. We're looking at making our final move. I mean, as you know out here, man, the housing and stuff, houses that sold for $225,000 in 2000, getting close to $900,000 now.
When we first moved there, we moved to Ashburn in the 3 weeks before 9/11, so in 2001. We bought a house there in the Broadlands that we paid, I think it was $384,000, and I had no idea how I was going to make the mortgage. I mean, I just thought that was outrageous, and we were the second owner, I think, of the house, maybe the third owner. That house, we still get updates from this realtor things online. That house is now worth over $1 million. It looks exactly the same.
We sold our house in Kansas for $76,000, 4-bedroom, 2-bath, single car garage, but sat on a full quarter acre. Moved out here, same thing, $225,000.
Unbelievable.
That was 2000. I know.
Well, that last house we said that we moved out of, it's appreciated another $150,000 to $200,000 from when we sold it 3 years ago.
And let me tell you the real estate market is still doing good out here. We just got some new neighbors. They moved out from Arizona, a young couple and their 4-year-old daughter, the cute little couple. But the market was going so fast, they bought the house sight unseen. They bought it from Arizona, never came out here to see it. They said they saw the pictures. Because I know the guy who owns the real estate firm that sold it to him, his wife did. And I'm going, how'd that happen? He goes, we kind of did a virtual tour. They go, we'll take it. They made an offer. And the market's starting to come back here. The only problem still, as you know, are the interest rates. So for those interest rates to come back down to that 2.5%, 3%, then it's time to move. But as one real estate agent told me, you know, marry the house, but date the rate.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I mean, when the difference could be $1,000 in your payment a month, that's a huge chunk.
It is. It is. And you got to consider there's still closing costs when you refinance.
Yeah.
So I know our both of our daughters are hoping that rate comes down because they both are in pretty high interest rates right now.
There's some people out here. Well, that's, they call it a constipated market. There's people who have houses where their rates are 2.5%, 2.75. They don't want to sell and have to get a rate for 6% or 6.75. So they call it a constipated market. We're going to need something to move it along.
Yeah. That's why we're staying here, because we got 2 3/8. So we'd like to go to the coast, but after watching what the hurricanes do to the coast anymore, I'm not sure I do want to move over there.
No, I think you're fine where you're at.
Yep, we're doing good. I never ask you this. Did you have any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I've got a younger sister and an older sister. So my older sister, if she's listening, Jerry, now Mason, she was born in Anchorage, Alaska. My dad was there when Alaska became a state. So he was, according to him, the lore is, he has one of the old howitzer shells, 105-millimeter shells. But that was one of the casings that came from the honor guard when they were firing off the howitzers when Alaska became the state.
Very cool. And I do remember her, because we used to talk crap about you.
All the time. Still do.
And your younger sister, she doesn't listen to the show at all?
No, I've told her, actually, I will tell you, though, who does, and I just went up to his graduation. So my younger sister's name is Lori Judd, but her son, my nephew, Michael Judd, apparently I may have inspired him a little bit somewhat, but he just graduated, and I went up for his graduation. He just graduated from the St. Paul Police Academy.
Nice.
I told him, though, and like a lot of other people, if you apply and you go to Minneapolis, you're dead to me. I will never talk to you again.
That's a different place, isn't it?
And it really is. It's like crossing the border. St. Paul, it has its troubled areas, but St. Paul, the support they get from the community. I went to the graduation and I saw the people that showed up, the community members. They actually have their own band. So they have a band, an auxiliary band that plays, you know, for stuff like this. And the mayor showed up and some council members showed up. And the community support was good. And he was built for this. I mean, he ended up being a big kid. He played high school football and college football, went to a college called Bethel out there. My two nieces, actually, so I have an older sister and a younger sister. He has an older sister and a younger sister, just very much like our family. But they went to the University of Minnesota, but he went to Bethel so he could play football. I mean, he's good, but D1 stuff is very competitive. But he's a big kid. He's like 6'2", 225. And he was just, when he got into his first foot pursuit and stuff, he's like, I was talking to his mom. Oh, yeah, I love this. I love this. He's eating it, which all rookies do, right?
Absolutely, man.
Until you get to be the training officer, you go, hey, rookie, go chase that guy. As you sit in your car drinking coffee.
It just brings back memories. I remember I was still riding with a training officer, a guy named Kelly Walls. And it was an evening shift, and some kid in his car came around a curve and just spinning his tires. And I mean, just acting a fool and needed to be stopped, needed a ticket. So they finally let me drive the cruiser. Kelly's riding passenger. And I hit the brakes on that thing, threw it in reverse, hit the gas. I smoked the tires more than that guy ever did. And then made more noise, probably created more danger than he did to start with to chase him down. But, you know, after we finished, Kelly's like, all right, dude, first of all, you're not driving anymore for a while. Second of all, you're worse than he is.
Yeah,
you
know, that's right.
So it's just that adrenaline pump, man. You just want to get out there and chase him.
My first chase I got into was actually, I didn't know it at the time, it was with the deputy sheriff's son, which he ended up getting far more punishment from his dad than any court could give him. But I'm chasing him out of town, and I remember, they go, I would think I was 901 or 902. They go, 902, you know, how close are you, you know, to the vehicle? I'm about 50 feet behind it, and you can hear everybody, get slow, get back. I mean, I was like, I was up on it.
Bumper lock.
Hey. All you got to do is follow the dust trail. It's like when you're out there, you get on those dirt roads. There's no running from that, because you just follow the dust trail and see where the tire marks go. So it's easy to find them.
That's a different kind of policing out there, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. But there were some times when I was a state trooper, I'd be the only guy out for four or five, maybe six counties. So you never know where you were going to get called to.
Yeah, it was crazy. Even as a railroad cop, there was when I transferred from Virginia back to West Virginia there in southern West Virginia, I was the only railroad cop on duty for 26 counties. And then my boss, I would back up the city police in a shooting one night, and he gets mad and tries to get me fired because I was helping the cops on non-railroad business. Dude, who do you think I'm going to call when I need help?
Well, tell them it's railroad business because you didn't want that cop to get railroaded for, inappropriate use of force. Ba-dum-bum, thank you.
There you go. Yeah, I tried that button that creates the sounds here on Riverside, and this timing is just not right.
Yeah,
maybe it's me. Maybe it's my geriatric hands trying to get to that button. I don't know.
Maybe it's shaky. Maybe Murph, it's a little shaky.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us where you went to college at.
Actually, where I've gone to three different ones, but my first one where I was a music major at was Fort Hays State University. So I grew up in a little town called Chapman. By the way, Chapman is home of Joe Engel, who is the second space shuttle commander. So he actually graduated from our high school. His nieces were in my class. I got to listen to it, but I went to a little college called Fort Hays State University as a music major, believe it or not. I went on a music scholarship.
How does that tie in with law enforcement and military?
Well, while I was actually in college, they did not have an ROTC. Now, you got to remember, I started college in 1978, so we're just fresh out of the Vietnam War. So there's a lot of people still talking about it. Well, we wanted to put an ROTC chapter there, Army ROTC. And so I was one of the, as a sophomore, I spoke in support of it, and they ended up bringing that. We were able to get it installed. So there were a group of us, the initial cadre of cadets. If to get into, so they had the program at that time was called MS1, Military Science through MS4. So you could get into the MS3 program, which would be our junior year, if you went through basic training or you belonged to the Guard or the Reserve. So some of us went Guard. I went through the Army Reserve. So I went through Fort Lost in the Woods, Missouri, known as Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, in June and July of 1979. So my goal was, because I was born at Fort Riley and I named my middle son Marshall after Marshall Airfield at Fort Riley, my goal was I wanted to fly helicopters. So
step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Cool.
I'm in there. I mean, I did. I aced what's called the flight aptitude simulation test. Mm-hmm. So basically, it was a series of pictures. You'd look at them, and they give you a basic idea of what the stick and the collective do and the rudder. So you had to figure out, okay, what was the position of each? Which way were you turning and stuff? So I aced that. I was like, okay, I'm ready. I got a slot. So I go through ROTC, and I have my slot at Fort Rucker, Alabama. I'm going to get my chance to fly helicopters. But they said, stay out of trouble. Don't get your ass in trouble. So I stayed away from the bars. going into that, the end of that year and going into summer. Stayed away from the bars. I went out roller skating because I say, hey, man, I'll do that. You still meet girls and stay in shape. So I'm sitting out there coming off the floor or getting ready to go onto the roller skating rink. And a kid, 6-year-old kid, comes off the floor. His skate hits the edge of the carpet there. He trips and falls and lands in my left knee, puts me in a cast. So they probably should have operated, but they didn't. But I'm in a cast from my toe to my crotch. I lose my slot for Fort Rucker. So I've spent 6 years in the reserves, but I don't get to go to Fort Rucker, which, so I ended up being in Signal Corps, you know, with the 382nd Medical Group of the Army Reserve Command, 88th ARCOM is what they call it. So Signal Corps instead of flying helicopters. But hey, you
just wasn't meant to be.
Well, however, there is a silver lining to the story. So if I'd stayed in, would have been, because that would have been 96, 97, would have had about 15 years in. And I stayed in touch with guys that, because you meet them at advanced camp and stuff like that, I would have been to Fort Rucker with, well, about, that's when Clinton was in office. And so they did the peacetime dividend. So they riffed reduction in force. They riffed a lot of people out, a lot of people in helicopter and transportation that were 04s, 05s, chief, what they call CW4s, chief warrant officer force. They got their $75,000 separation pay. Here you go. Thank you for your service. Did not get a pension. Did not get retirement. Riffed out with 15 years in.
And the 04s and 05s. I mean, you're talking, that's colonels and above.
Yeah, so an 04 is a major, 05 is a lieutenant colonel, 06 is a colonel. So, yeah, I mean, you're talking senior people, senior pay, command level responsibilities, and they were all there. Hey, here's your check. See you later.
Wow. Wow. Well, things happen for a reason, man. I'm a firm believer in that.
They do. So instead, what I do, so you're asking, how'd I get into law enforcement? So found out it was easier to arrest the little suckers than it was to teach them. So it all started, and I will give credit to a guy named Ken Massey. I believe he's still alive. If he is, I mean, he's up in age, but his radio number was 449, and he was driving one of the 78 Chevys, the two-door Chevys. And he used to come into the little stop and rob where I was working. And he said, hey, you want to go out for a ride sometime? I go, well, yeah, sure. So went out for a ride and I was hooked. I'm like, God, this is what I want to do. Well, they kind of said, hey, look, you know, you're still kind of young. You might want to get some experience. So I started off on Salina PD. So I joined them in 1982. And then I tested for the State Patrol that year. I got on in July of 1984. So that year, 2,000 people applied. They only hired 16.
That was for the troopers? Yep.
Yeah. You know who could not get on the highway patrol?
Who?
Your buddy from DEA that took credit for the first El Chapo capture. Remember the dude that took credit for capturing El Chapo? Abe and Paul did? Yeah. He was on Ellsworth County Sheriff's Office. He tried to get on the state patrol. We wouldn't hire him. So what did he do? He went to DEA.
Oh, there you go. Don't expect anything, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. It's like you have to take so many. I don't want to call him a loser, but.
He only served his own self-interest. Otherwise, you know, when we did that episode with Abe and Paul, they were funny. I mean, it was like, but they were about the mission. And it's like while they're sitting waiting for one thing, they see a Cadillac drive by and end up taking off 800 kilos of coke, you know, while they're waiting for another deal. It's just, you know, but the other guy, what did he want to do? Beat his chest. Hey, El Chapo, what's up? You know, please.
Ridiculous. And quit. Gave up his law enforcement career.
Yeah, and thought he was going to be this big movie star and got, you know, interviewed on TV. And then it's like, everybody knows you weren't the man. I mean, it takes guys. You look at guys like that get on TV and you realize, you think you did this by yourself?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And that goes back to that old saying that you've heard me say 100 times. If you got to toot your own horn, it's probably not worth tooting.
Yep.
But you said you went to three colleges, right?
Yeah. So while I was out there, I realized that, look, in the state of Kansas, and I love Kansas, just still got family there, but the retirement system is not that great. And I know I needed to develop some additional skills, move on. So I knew I needed music was, okay, it's music, right? But I thought, okay, look, Friends University had a distance learning. So if you already had college credits, degrees and stuff, you could enroll in that. And basically it was a year course. So you'd go on weekends and there'd be one time where you do 2 days. But so I went back and I got a degree in human resource management. And then as I was a detective, I started thinking, So I started thinking, because when I was a trooper, started doing a lot of accident reconstruction and got my first computer back then, a Tandy 1000SL. Well, I taught myself how to do some basic programming, because doing some of those formulas were very complicated. And so I tried to create something where I could just change variables and let the computer, you know, do the work. Well, then as a detective, I started getting into the initial investigation of computer crime. So when that started happening, I started thinking, hey, maybe I'd, you know, go back and, because they offered, all about timing, right? Then they came back and they offered a 1-year degree in computer information systems. So I said, yeah. So I got that done. So I got those things done. And then that's when things, you start really evaluating. It's kind of like, you want to play on a bigger stage, right? One of the reasons you joined DEA. I mean, you could make those fancy drug busts, get a half an ounce of coke, or, which, by the way, that was your biggest, right? An 8-ball was you thought, there can't be this much dope.
Yeah.
What was that?
They have 2 ounces.
2 ounces, yeah. And you start thinking, look, but it's kind of like I had somebody say, look, you can be the best Shakespearean actor you want to be, but if you're playing to an empty theater every night, is that what you want to do?
Right.
So it was kind of like, what can I do? Well, and then through serendipity, things start coming around. So I started getting contacted by these recruiters from some big firms like Ernst & Young. But one of them that was very interesting was SAIC, Science Applications International Corporation, which a lot of people say is CIA's spelled backward, because they were doing a lot of stuff for the government. But they were getting into computer crime, computer investigation. I was instructing at that time. In fact, I spent a year training the FBI on internet investigations and at that time, too. But I was also doing behavior analysis and interview and interrogation. I went through a training course taught by one of the original members of the FBI's behavioral science unit, a guy named William Peters. So I was teaching interview and interrogation as well. So one of the places I taught at, too, for a while, I was teaching state and local, but I got to go to the National Security Agency and teach out at their National Cryptologic School to what they called damage assessment agents that were involved in espionage cases. Now, just so people know, intelligence community, except for the FBI or DHS, but the CIA, NSA, they don't have authority to investigate crime. That's the jurisdiction of the FBI, counterintelligence matters, espionage, right? But what these guys did is they were the polygraphers. They were the other agents that when there was a breach or somebody was involved in espionage, they were also not only the liaison, but they did their own damage assessment. How much information was leaked? How did it come out? So you're like Edward Snowden, you said, well, that was a damage assessment. How much information did he get? How did he get it? What can we put in place to prevent that in the future? So I had people that were involved in the Alder James case, Earl Edwin Pitts, Harold James Nicholson. These are all famous espionage cases. But that kind of got me thinking, man, because I was doing that from Kansas at the time. I'm like, no, nah, I would. So long story short, as this recruiter gets back to me, he's like, hey, we have another job here at SAIC, which it was a lot of government related stuff, but it was incident response, the original, some of the computer incident response stuff. And so, I mean, that's, we took the chance. And I mean, the pay they offered, they paid for moving everything, every expense. Oh. So I was commuting back and forth for 6 months, finishing up my computer information systems degree before we moved out. So that's how it happened.
Wow. I mean, and you're not moving like from Reston over to Ashburn there, 5 miles away. You're moving across country.
My daughter had never lived anywhere else. I was, so like you, Murph, I was divorced and remarried. My boys were living in Garden City, but then they moved to Salina when their mother moved there. But my wife had always lived in Garden City her entire life. That's all our daughter knew. So to pick up and move to, now our oldest boy, my wife's son from her first marriage, he's still in Garden City, but he was older, you know, at that time. So, but yeah, to pick up and move from Southwest Kansas to Northern Virginia, I'd moved so much. For me, it was like, hey, it's an adventure. But for them, it was like culture shock. It's like, oh my God. I mean, in Garden City, Kansas, love it. Great town, great people. But if you wanted to get to the next biggest town, you had to almost go 200 miles.
Wow.
But out here, it's like, that is in Northern Virginia. It's like, oh my gosh. I mean, you drive 20 miles. I can be in Washington, D.C. I can be in Maryland. I can be in Delaware. I can be in West Virginia. I could actually be in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I mean, so you've got, and then just like the population of Loudoun County has doubled since we've been here. So now it's over 500,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's huge. It's like moving from southern West Virginia to Miami, Florida.
Yeehaw! Hey, where do we park our horses?
I got a wagon, too. But and you ended up going to, there's some school that you like. I don't know why. They have a little bit of a sports team. Occasionally they win a game. Sometimes they don't.
Rally Sons of Notre Dame.
Oh, Lord, where's
her glory and sound her fame? Yeah, so I did. I had a chance when I came out to Virginia to go to the graduate school, the business school at Notre Dame, Mendoza College of Business. So I did my graduate work at Notre Dame. So growing up there, watching that stuff, my goal was always to do something. So I am a proud graduate of the executive leadership course out of the Mendoza School of Business at Notre Dame University.
Very nice. And for those of y'all have been listening for a long time, we used to have some discussions about football here. College football.
Yeah, well, they're ranked number 8 now. They would have been higher had they not lost Northern Illinois. How do you lose to Northern Illinois? I'll tell you how you lose. You get arrogant. You think, okay, they're a speed bump. Or they look forward to next week. Never again, pal. Never again. Never. Don't do that to me.
Who did Tennessee beat this year that shocked everybody?
Alabama.
Well, Vanderbilt beat Alabama, too.
I mean, so Vandy. I'm sorry. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah. Well, I was going to go, I don't know. Yeah, you go. Because they used Nick Saban's line, basically. He didn't consider Vanderbilt. He's like, well, anybody in the SEC can beat them, kind of was the throwaway line. But I'm having fun watching Nick Saban on ESPN Sports Center College Game Day.
Yeah.
I tell you what's good about him now that he's been able to stay away. But his analysis, his knowledge, you can't dispute. 7-time, you know, college football champion. It's like Tom Brady, man. You're the GOAT.
I'm a Saban fan. I liked Alabama while he was there. Tide's okay now, but I'm more of a Saban fan. And the funny thing is, Connie and I were reading articles here just in the last couple of days where Saban's originally from West Virginia, so there's all these rumors now. Neil Brown doesn't have a winning season. He might end up with a winning season, but the fans aren't too happy, and Saban's going to come to West Virginia. No, he's not.
No, he's not. He's done. I tell you, he was done. I was scheduled to do a series of radio interviews, and one of them was with a station in Birmingham, and they had to cut it off, or they had to cancel. Because that was the day Nick Saban announced his, quote, surprise. I mean, it was quick, surprise retirement. Mm-hmm. But when you listen to why he did, it's this name, image, likeness stuff. It's NIL. He said it's going to destroy college football. You can't mentor and grow these people into young men anymore. They don't want that. They want, how much money do I get? When you see kids, when you see freshmen and sophomores in college showing up to football practice in Corvettes, and stuff like that. It's like, I'm sorry, man. That's the wrong. How soon before that happens in high school now?
Yep, that's one of the few reasons, or many reasons, maybe, that I'm more of a college football fan than I was professional football. That and some other things, but it's just it's what I liked about college football is those guys want to make it to the big leagues. Well, now they just want to make money.
You might make enough
where the money is,
but you look. For some of these kids where they come from, you might make enough money during college to where you go, hey, if I go to the pros, that's fine. If I don't, that's fine. But here's the problem. Most of them, I would say it's like winning the lottery. They say, what is it? 90% of all lottery winners go bankrupt because they've never had money and they don't know how to handle money. That's what you're going to have here. They're going to think, oh, I can live fat, dumb, and happy. They're going to be going out, throwing out $100 bills for tips and going to clubs.
Yep.
And then they're going to wake up one morning and go, hey, when the money runs out, guess what? The friends run out too.
It's amazing, and they see it happen to other people. I guess they think it's never going to happen to me. I don't know.
Yeah, we've heard that before.
Yeah. Did you you picked Army because your dad? I'm presuming.
Yep.
That's nice. And then, why did you pick law enforcement? Had you always wanted to be a cop since you was a kid, or
no, not really. I mean, I always had respect for law enforcement. I think I've told you this story, but I got pulled over. 16 years old, drag racing out of Abilene, Kansas, in my sister's 67 Pontiac Firebird.
Yeah. And nice car.
Yeah. And I got in trouble, and I peed my pants. It's like I'd never been pulled. I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to prison for the rest of my life. Well, the guy was decent to me. But I ended up, one of the things I had a lot of respect for, I was a wrestler. I didn't play football, but I wrestled. But I had a letter jacket on, and I was over in Abilene. Well, Abilene was our arch rivals, the Abilene Cowboys, the Chapman Fighting Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a 7-Eleven. I still remember it's on the corner of Buckeye, and I can't think of the road, but I think it's Old 40. It's what they used to call it. And I got sucker punched by a kid out of from Abilene. Well, Larry Cole, who was on the Abilene PD at that time, was right there, saw that, arrested the kid, and treated me nice. Well, Larry Cole ended up going to the Highway Patrol just a year after that, and then long story short, when I went to Salina, ran into Larry a couple of times, and then, but that's kind of where I kind of into it. It's kind of like, you know, what is it I can do? It's kind of like, that seemed like so much fun. So, well, it was fun because I got a ticket and you know, I got hit, got sucker punched, literally got sucker punched. I see this fist comes around, hits me in the side, splits the inside of my lip. And before I could turn around, because I would have taken the guy, I mean, I wrestled, so I would have nuked that kid. But Larry happened to be right there, slapped, you know, habeas gravis on him, as we say, and saved me from getting in even more trouble.
Yeah. Well, and then the trooper took you on a ride, right? That was a trooper that took you out?
Yeah. Ken Massey. So yeah. That's why I said I wanted to get to the state patrol. He's kind of like, hey, see if you can get on the police department first. Not that you had to, but but there were people who had tried 4 or 5 times to get on the patrol and didn't make it because they had no experience. And they could, back in those days, as you know, Murph, too, you could be selective. I mean, again, like I said, when I got on, by the way, not to brag, I was number two. Phil Boston, if he's listening to this, he's the chief of police now in Park City, which, by the way, Park City is where BTK, Dennis Rader, is from.
There you go.
So Park City, Kansas. But he was number one. I was number two. But again, they had 2,000 people apply. I remember going to the physical selection, and you had to do, you know, written test, and then you did the physical agility course. There were cars in the parking lot, tons of people there. Now it's like one of the guys I used to work with at Garden City went to the State Patrol. Now he's the captain of the training academy, a guy named Chris Bauer. I stay connected with the patrol people and stuff. They're struggling to recruit. They actually had to change the law. One of the things they did is they were having a tough time getting people to come in. So they passed a law to where you could do something you never could do before, which is do a lateral transfer. So now they've got people coming out of law enforcement, doing a mini academy, and then going into the state patrol. So
that's what
it is, a tough business.
It seems to be like that everywhere. DEA basic agent class is supposed to have 50 to 55 trainees in it. They're lucky if they can get 33, 35 in the class. Having the same problem with diversion investigators, with chemists, with the intelligence analyst. It's outrageous. But I've been doing some things here for Orlando Police Department, and I met with the chief, and he has figured it out. He's got a 900-man department. His vacancy rate, and I haven't talked to him in over a year now, but hope to get him on the show here soon, but very few openings. I mean, less than 20 openings in a 900-man department.
And that's just natural attrition, people leaving or quitting or moving on, you know.
And so what they're doing is he got the city to approve a little bit of a bonus package for transitioning officers. So all those guys that are bailing out of Oregon and Washington State, hey, here's some money. This will pay your moving expenses. You come to an abbreviated academy here for 2 or 3 weeks, learn Florida law. You're on the street. Can't beat it. And we as the citizens of Orlando, benefit from it.
You do, because you have a nearly fully staffed. Because the toughest thing was during shifts, if somebody called in sick, and you used to have, so in Salina where I started out at, you'd have 5 districts plus safety 1, which was north, and safety 2, which was south. So they were like officers. They drove station wagons that had additional equipment. I wouldn't want to drive a station wagon. I'm sorry. That's like what my parents drove, but that's what they drove. But you'd have 7 people on the street plus a lieutenant on the street. You'd have a desk sergeant. And then our communicators back at the time were actually sworn law enforcement. So that was like a promotion. But there'd be times though too to where you'd have a lieutenant and 4 people and that was it, you know. But that was rare. But it's like you would love to have, you know, staff, because you could do things differently. I don't know how big they have now, but I'm with you. It's kind of like there's so much more impact you have. It's not that there's a misnomer that thinks, hey, if you put a cop in every street corner, you're going to stop crime. Well, as Sir Robert Peel said, the father of modern community policing, he says a good police force isn't about all the arrests you make. It's basically a good police force. The absence of crime is an indicator of a good police force. So it's like you want them out there preventing crime. You don't want the crime happening. They'll say, well, why do we need this many cops? We don't have a lot of crime. You have a lot of crime. You don't have a lot of crime because you got a lot of cops, right? We've seen what happens when you take cops off the street and what happens to crime.
Yep. Yeah. And what was the name of that place? Minneapolis?
Minnie No More.
Yeah. It's outrageous. So you and I used to talk a lot about on our guests here and going through the academies. And, you know, I had to write a couple memos when I was going through the DEA Academy. When you went through your police academies, tell us about some of your little adventures there that we might have never heard from before.
Well, there wasn't really much in the first one I went through, the Kansas Law Enforcement Training Center, because back in 82, it was only 5 weeks. Believe it or not, it was only 5 weeks long. So there wasn't much there. But it was the State Patrol Academy. I was one of those inquisitive people that liked to ask questions. So,
everybody hates you in class.
Well, no, I wasn't keeping them there, but I wanted to truly understand. So I remember it was Captain Craig Duell was teaching the course on traffic laws. And we were talking about to charge somebody with fleeing and eluding. You had to be displaying, you know, red lights with the siren, displaying your badge of office. I mean, the statute was pretty clear. And my question to him, which he got mad at me, I was saying, well, okay, so you're in a pursuit and stuff. Well, what if they can't see the badge? You know, well, you know, you just have to display it. I said, but what if they can't, what if they're so far ahead they can't hear the siren and you can't catch up to them? Does that still constitute fleeing and eluding? Do they have to hear or see something? It was a legitimate question, but he kind of got mad at me. And so I had the other people side-eyeing me, you know, like, but I, for me, it was a serious question because I'll tell you why, because I read the statutes. I mean, one of the things I did is I did my homework. So when I was out training, my first training officer was a guy named Wes Wheeler, K-382. And we were out driving around late one night. But what you did is you did 7 weeks in, you'd move to where you were going to go be stationed at. You did 4 weeks observation, you know, ride with them. And then you come back for your 7 weeks. And then you'd go back out for your FTO period, which could be another 2 months, you know, depending.
Right.
So, from the time you were hired till the time you got out on your own could be, you know, 6 months, basically. So, but we were driving one night and there's this truck in front of us, truck, tractor, semi-trailer. And he asked me, he said, what's wrong with that? Because you could see the red lights on the back. I said, well, according to the statute, like there were two red lights on the left side and two red lights on the right side. Well, the statute says the outermost lights have to work. I said, well, it's missing that light. Oh, okay. He didn't think I was going to get that. But that was the detail you had to have. And so that's why I was focused in on this. How come we never really wrote memos? But I do remember one of the things the our counselors, as we called them, would do to us is that, like, at the end of the first 7 weeks and then towards the end of graduation, they'd go out, you'd be upstairs, and they'd go, get changed, we're going for a run, Scanlon Run. So we were on Scanlon Avenue. And our academy at that time used to be the old Air Force Base, Minute Manor, at Schilling Air Force Base.
Oh,
so
cool.
They would have B-52s stationed out of there. We had saw KC-135s and 130s and B-52s doing refueling exercises. So they said, we're going to go do the Scanlon Run, which was 3 miles, a mile and a half down to Tony's Pizza. If anybody's from there, turn around and come back. Well, when you go down there, what they'd done was, and like you had 3 minutes, like go down there, get changed, get back out. So you go down there. What they did is they took all the other people's running shoes and they tied them all together. So you had to spend time. So it's like you got, well, see, I was a little different. I was one of the people, I got shoes. Mine didn't have, I was one of the first people that had the Velcro straps on there. So they didn't know what to do with mine. So they filled them with shaving cream. So, but they were mad. But I do remember I got talked to because right before I was out getting in shape and doing some running before I went there. But right before I went there, I got some kind of a bug or whatever. I mean, it was, when I went out and run, I was slower than what I would normally have been. But when we got to the end of that first 7 weeks, my time rapidly improved and they thought I was sandbagging. And I said, I wasn't sandbagging. I got whatever it was, it just lingered for so long.
Yeah.
But we never really wrote memos. But I tell you what, though, one place you didn't want to screw around at, as you know, too, you don't want to screw around out on the range.
Right. Oh, they take that very seriously. That'll get you kicked out.
Yep. We didn't get anybody get kicked out, but we had one. So we trained the State Patrol as well as what they called CASP, Capital Area Security Patrol. They were the folks that guarded the Capitol and mm-hmm. Capitol grounds. So they went through an abbreviated course. They were there for some of it. But one of them started to do something stupid, and one of the instructors grabbed the Smith & Wesson, put his hand over the hammer and stuff before the person could do something stupid. And that was as close as we got to having somebody kicked out, but no excitement.
Yeah. When I went through the West Virginia State Police Academy to be a city cop, when you screwed up, you'd have to go stand post. So, you know, you might be on fire watching from 2 to 4 a.m. And then if the class screwed up, you're marching or running.
Marching. I will tell you the one thing we had the Mennonites cooking for us. The Mennonites is both, if you guys don't know, they're kind of an offshoot of the Amish. They're a little bit different, but kind of follow the same. But they could cook. Oh, my God. Nobody lost weight during that first 7 weeks. And whatever contract they had, they changed. No, actually, we kept them because different people were cooking on at Kansas Law Enforcement Training Sector, Training Academy. the center, I'm sorry. And we would get broccoli that looked like trunks of trees. It's just crappy stuff. And it's like, oh, my God, what the hell is this? But the Amish, oh, my God, they could cook. The Mennonites, they could cook. We had too much starch, I think. But nobody really lost weight during the academy. So I know that.
Well, when I went to that first academy, they still had a fat man's table. So, and that was the instructor's discretion. They had an old retired army cook in there fixing all the meals at the State Police Academy. Just great food. But you never want to get called over to the fat man's table either. Just a point of pride, I guess. In the DEA Academy, I went through, we were at the FBI Academy there in Quantico. Well, the where the cafeteria is located, directly underneath it was the cleaning room for all the firearms.
Oh, that was a lovely smell.
Hoppies in everything you ate, that hoppy smell, that cleaning solvent. It's like, oh my gosh, I think they've changed it around now to get rid of that. But that's a memory that never goes away.
When one memory real quick that goes away for me is when going through the chow line at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, they had the stuff, we used to call it the Fort Leonard Wood crud. They said they were saying it, this is what they put it in. Basically, they were trying to keep soldiers from going out and fornicating, you know, on their time off and getting in trouble. But what it was a collection of electrolytes because during June and July, the humidity would be up, the temperature would be up. It was this brown looking stuff, almost looked like sludge. I can still taste, but it was filled with electrolytes and other stuff. I'll tell you what, I hated it, but I learned to love it because you watch guys that would drop. And actually, I spent 2 days in the hospital. My hypothalamus gland, as I found out later, triggered while we were out during bivouac. And my temperature went up to like 103, 104 out in the field.
Ooh.
So I'm in an ambulance. I'm on a cold bed. Come back, but I was still able to qualify. Hand grenade course, rifle course, all that good stuff. Didn't get recycled. I was almost recycled the last week of basic training.
Because of that,
yeah.
And for those that don't understand what that means you got to go through the whole thing again.
Got to do it again. And I wouldn't have been able to because I did it during the summer because that was the break between the sophomore and junior year in college, and then the ROTC program started our junior year.
Mm-hmm.
Major Allred and Sergeant Major Mounts, I will never forget them to this day. Sergeant Major Mounts. You need a good NCO when you're an officer, and he knew every trick in the book. I showed up, I had these thing called the Cochran jump boots. They had instead of looking like regular combat boots, they had like a toe across the front, you know, with leather that was stitched. So you had like a toe cap and then they had an end cap, and you always wanted your shoes to, you know, boots to be shiny. Well, I learned a trick to use Formica floor wax. You take a cotton ball and use Formica and it would look really good. So he came up to me one time and said, "Hey, those boots look pretty shiny there, son." I said, "Yes, they do." He says, "Take one off." Okay. And all he did was take them and twist it a little bit. Well, it cracked the floor wax.
I think you need to redo that, boy. What do you think?
And he gave it back to me and says, "Son, I believe you're out of uniform." And after that, then I learned the other trick, was to learn cotton balls and pantyhose and a lighter. So what you do is you take the pantyhose and you can dip it into the boot wax and put it on there and you rub it in there real good. And then you use the lighter to kind of melt the wax a little bit. Then you take the cotton ball with water and you use it to really shine it. So that's how I learned to shine boots.
Wow. I did the spit shine when I was in uniform, when I was with the city, and just put water on your rag with the polish and it would put up a really nice shine. But the pantyhose really puts a buff on it.
What you'd finish up with, do the cotton ball, get that all wiped in, and then take a clean piece of pantyhose and do that last. Yeah. And it would sound like perverts. Hey, you got some pantyhose? Well,
the trick was, don't use the ones that your wife was still using. She didn't appreciate that too much.
Yeah, wouldn't appreciate that.
How long were you with Salina?
So I was with Salina for 3 years, the State Patrol for 6 years, and then Garden City for about 9 years. So about 18 years total when I decided. That was the decision, right? Do you stay in because you got 18 years in? But your age and years of service had to add up to 80 or 85, I think, before you could retire 55% of what you couldn't afford to live on in the first damn place.
Wow.
So yeah. I was like, no, there has to be a better. I mean, again, it was one of those things. It's like, I loved it. But the other thing, too, was in smaller departments, there's not a lot of opportunity. Literally, people have to die or retire to move up. And it's like, I don't want to wait 5 years for an opportunity to do something. So.
Yeah.
Tough as it was, you know, my own thing for about a year before we moved, because I was getting myself set up. And so, but that's where I got involved in doing the training with the FBI and John Reed and Associates, and then got the offer to move out to Virginia. It was like, okay, the timing is right.
All right. Listen, brother, we've been going about an hour. I want to call a halt on this on the first episode. And ladies and gentlemen, come back tomorrow for the second part of this. We're going to get more into what Morgan's doing now, how he drives people crazy.
He drives me crazy.
I now have the control of the mute button, so I may have to employ that before we finish.
And the edit button, too. You can, or either that, or if you call me to edit you, I may make you look, I may put a little voice that sounds like Foster Brooks that are on, hey, boys.
Oh, that might be natural, though, at my age. It depends on whether I'm taking my meds or not. But, hey, everybody, come back and join us for part two tomorrow. See you then. Hey, players, that's the end of part one. Part two comes out, as always, on Tuesday. In the meantime, just a reminder that Game of Crimes is now posting interview videos on YouTube. You can find those at Game of Crimes Podcast. Our website is gameofcrimespodcast.com, where you'll find all our episodes, our guests, book lists, merchandise, and more. And for more content, join us on patreon.com/gameofcrimes. I have several monthly episodes that range from silly to serious, so come on over and join the fun. In the meantime, everyone stay safe. I'll see you tomorrow for part two.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.